Morning. It's good to be with you today. Especially glad to have so many of you that are visiting with us. We're glad that you chose to come our way. Hope that you can come back and be with us again. As Jason said, we are looking at the process of appointing elders. Last week, we looked at some examples that we see in the New Testament of the responsibility that churches have to do that. And that is the pattern that we see in the New Testament. So what we saw is that in the New Testament, that when churches were established, there was a need, and there was an effort to go to those churches and appoint elders in every congregation, and it was always, plural, and it was each congregation was autonomous. It wasn't that there was a eldership set up for the city of Birmingham that was going to cover every church there. So you didn't see that kind of example in the New Testament. But the elders were among the flock. They were part of the flock that was among them. And that elders were appointed in every church. And so they're not over a multitude of churches. We saw that as we studied last week. We also, as we looked through the scriptures last week, we saw that the term elder was used in different ways. There are different Greek words that are translated differently to refer to the same office. Elders is obviously a word that we're familiar with because we think of someone that's older, and that's the word presbytos or presbyter, which would represent somebody that is mature, somebody that's not a child, and we'll say more about that in a moment. Also, the word bishop is episkopos, it means overseer, and so the role of an elder is to oversee something, and the task is to oversee the congregation. One of the more popular terms that we hear used today is the term shepherd or pastor. We see the word pastor used or misused quite a bit to refer to somebody that is a preacher or a minister, and it is certainly possible that a minister can be a pastor, but there can be a pastor that's not a minister, and there can be a minister that's not a pastor. Because there are many young ministers that would not fit the qualifications of elders that we'll see as we go through this study. But the point that we saw last week is that there were not, many distinct offices or positions or roles, but it was just different words that are all referencing the same thing, referencing the same duty. So it's different ways to describe those men and their work. I think it's appropriate because each one of those words brings out a little bit different flavor of that responsibility. Certainly the word shepherd gives you an idea of what would be done in that role. And I think that may be one of the reasons why that has become a popular word to use to refer to this office. In fact, many times today you hear the word shepherd used instead of the word elder. And it's just a choice, but I believe that the word shepherd has the connotation of a spiritual role within the congregation. And certainly that is important. So not three distinct offices, but different ways to describe the same man and their work. So as we go through this study today, obviously, you could look at the different qualifications that we see in the New Testament, as Ms. Brennan read for us this morning. We can take each one of those and do a whole lesson or series of lessons on each one of those qualifications. We're not going to do that at this time. We did take more time about a year and a half ago to break these things down. So if you did not hear those lessons, they are on our website. If you'll go back a little more than a year, you can hear more detail on some of these qualifications if you'd like, or if you'd like to discuss any of them personally, I'd be glad to do that if you'd like any clarification or any more information. But before we start looking at each one of these qualifications briefly this morning, let's go ahead and review them. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, and Titus chapter 1, verses 6 through 9, are the two main passages that we see where these qualifications are listed. There are other passages as well that refer and infer, you know, the duties of the eldership, but these are the two main ones that list them for us. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of an overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own household well with all dignity, keeping his children submissive. For if someone does not know how to manage his own household, how will he care for God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become puffed up with conceit and fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil. And 1 Timothy also goes on to talk about the qualifications for deacons, which is not the topic at hand today. But we'll cover that in another lesson. And then Titus chapter 1, verses 6 through 9, if you flip over a few pages in your Bible. In verse 5 it says, "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you may put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." Just a side note there, and we mentioned this last week, is that Paul's instruction here to Titus is to set things in order. And so what he was seeing is that without elders established here, things were out of order. Things were not the way that they should be. And so just a repeat of one of the things we mentioned last week is that congregations that become comfortable having things out of order is not following God's instruction. We should seek to have things in God's order if there are those that are qualified to be elders. So Paul tells Titus, "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you may put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. If anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife, and his children are believers, and are not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination, for an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant, or quick-tempered, or a drunkard, or violent, or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine, and also to rebuke those who contradict it." And so these are two of the main passages that we see where this instruction is given. So let's briefly look at these qualifications. To be temperate, you know, means that we would call that even keeled, somebody that is not going to lose their temper easily. And then they're watchful over themselves. And so, you know, practically, that would be someone who is not going to wear their feelings on their sleeve, but they are going to be self-controlled and able to control their emotions. And I'll just say that when we think about these qualifications, we should not think that if someone has ever lost their temper ever in their life, that means that they are not qualified to be an elder or an overseer. You know, their manner of life should be that they are temperate and they are self-controlled. And hopefully, if someone has an issue with anger, that's something that they work on over time. And that their manner of life is when they do step out of line, when they do sin, and should be the same for any Christian, is that we repent of those things and we correct them, and we grow and become more Christ-like. And so think about things in those terms when you're thinking about the qualification of elders, because if you are thinking that we have to find somebody that's perfect, that has never violated one of these principles, then no church ever will have elders ever. So also to be sober. And sober, we usually think of sober in regard to whether or not you're intoxicated, either by alcohol or drugs, and that's really not what the word sober is meaning here. It's meaning that you're of sound mind, that you're able to think straight. And certainly, if you are intoxicated, that has an effect on you being able to be of sober mind, and you don't make good judgments when you're not sober. But this means to have mature judgment, to be self-restrained, to be someone who thinks before he acts or thinks before he talks and is not under the control of his passions. Just recently, we were having a discussion of someone that I used to work with, and one of the criticisms that some had of him is that he would always immediately react to any situation before he considered all the different aspects of it. And you can certainly see why that would be important of somebody in a leadership role, is to be sober-minded and to consider all points of view or to consider all facts of a situation before you start reacting to it, because it's not always easy to backtrack when you've made a rash decision. And to be of good behavior, to have a well-mannered life, that those that look at you would consider you to be somebody that is well-behaved, has good manners, as we'd say in the old days, and that they're thought of well by others. And you saw that in both of the passages here in Titus and in 1 Timothy, the qualification of being thought of well by those who are outside. And so we understand that when we come together in the assembly, you know, we're dressed nice usually and you know, well behaved. If we're going to be well behaved at any time, it's probably going to be when we're together here. But what Paul is telling Timothy and Titus is that the one that is to be an elder, to be in that role, needs to be well thought of by those outside. Does not need to be the type of person that somebody would look at and say, well, I just recently found out that you're a Christian, or I just recently found out that you're a member of whatever congregation. And if they act all surprised that they couldn't believe that you would be involved in anything religious or spiritual, then maybe that's an issue there. But to be of good behavior. Also, to be given to hospitality. And when we think about hospitality, and we've mentioned this in lessons on this particular subject, the word hospitality in the New Testament really means being kind to strangers. It doesn't mean that you invite the preacher out every time that there's a meeting. Or that you have somebody over into your home once in a while. Certainly that would be a mark of hospitality, and I'm not discouraging anybody from asking me over to their house. But if we think about hospitality as simply meaning, well, you know, we all like to get together, and we all like potlucks, and we all like to eat, that's not what hospitality means. Hospitality means kindness to strangers. And that, I think, that puts it on another level, because It's pretty easy to be kind to those and to want to spend time with those that you're familiar with. But when it comes to being kind and hospitable to those who may not be in your circle, that's more what the word means in the New Testament, being friendly and helpful to strangers. And you can certainly see that in the church in Jerusalem and the way that they behaved. When there were so many on the day of Pentecost that believed, you know, they had things in common. They were hospitable to one another. And that, think about it in that regard. Apt to teach, capable and ready to teach. And this is a qualification that sometimes, you know, is a point of discussion in some congregations, because there are some people that are not very comfortable speaking publicly. And because a man may have never taught a public Bible class does not mean he's not a teacher. It's very good that he would be able to do that, But if he is good at teaching one-on-one and sitting down and being an instructor, there's all different ways that we teach. It certainly is good for us to do that and to become more comfortable with speaking. In fact, my brother, who is an elder at the Edwards Lake congregation, is he hates speaking. And it's something that as soon as he gets up in the pulpit, his face turns beet red. I think he's going to explode. And it's not something that's comfortable for him, but he is one that is very qualified to be an elder because he's very good at teaching, and he teaches classes, and he teaches and instructs people one-on-one when they need spiritual instruction. So don't think just because somebody is uncomfortable in the pulpit that would mean, well, you know, they're not apt to teach. So it could be, you know, through various mediums, one-on-one, and certainly through their example, but it should be more than that, more than just their example. It should be there should be some overt teaching going on, and what that means is that they have the ability to teach because they know what they're talking about, because they know the Word of God. That's why, you know, they're not to be a novice. There may be somebody that's elderly, somebody that's old, that would fit that kind of term if you're talking about elder. But being a novice and not having a handle on the Word of God, even though they may fit other qualifications, you can't be apt to teach if you don't have something to teach. You cannot teach something that you don't know. And so, also, the desire to do the work and the... Not that you would want to do that for any kind of selfish reasons or to afford, you know, for prideful reasons, but to want to serve the Lord in a leadership role. And it's one of the things I believe that we learn from the parable of the talents, is that when somebody has the ability to do something, when they have the resource to do something, God expects us to do something with that resource. And so a man that fits these qualifications, as we see, it may be selfish on their part to say, well, you know, I don't want to do that because I'll get criticized. I don't want to do that because it's going to take up so much of my time. And so desiring to do the work is something that is important and a good attribute. As we've already mentioned, not to be a novice, and that's pretty self-explanatory, that it's someone that knows the Word of God. And you know, people can grow into that. Obviously people can grow in their knowledge. So there may be somebody that's the husband of one wife and they've got believing children and they fit all the other qualifications, but they're just so new. Or it may be that they are new to a congregation and they don't know any of the sheep. And so that they would have a hard time being in that role because to shepherd the flock, and they don't know any of the sheep, they don't know their names, they don't know any of their history. And so it may take time to grow into that. So not a novice, not a new convert. And also not to have a quick temper. We've mentioned this already, but somebody that's not hot-headed or impulsive with their feelings, not vengeful. And certainly, as we're going to mention at the end of the lesson, this is something that should be a quality of everybody. This is not saying, okay, everybody else here that's not going to be an elder, everybody else can be vengeful, and everybody else can be angry and rash and hot-headed. And you know, certainly that would not, you know, be good for any congregation to have a room full of people that are all hot-headed. And certainly I don't believe that we have that here, and we don't want that. So a qualification of an elder is that you need to not have a quick temper and not be self-willed. And those two things go together a little bit, you know, temper and being self-willed. When people don't get their way, sometimes it leads to quick tempered. And so what would self-willed mean? It would mean that you want to get your way. And that you are going to make things go your way. And so being haughty or overbearing and arrogant would be attributes of someone that is self-willed and not humble. Also not given to wine. You know, one who does not drink wine, other intoxicating drinks, understands the dangers of those. There's a lot of things that are involved in that category, and certainly the influence that one would destroy if they were one that was prone to drink. Plus, being intoxicated, being drunk, obviously wrong, and an elder would not be one that would need to be participating in that. Not being a brawler. This goes back to the anger part and being temperate. That one that's always ready to, well, let's go outside and settle this like a man. That type of thing. And I actually had a situation recently where somebody was upset with me, and they wanted to, I said, let's step outside. And I said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. And this is not something I think either one of us is ready to discuss outside at this point. So it turned out okay. And so it was an example of me not being a brawler. And so I was not about, he's bigger than me anyway. So it wasn't going to turn out well, regardless. So, but it was not. That was not the way to settle an argument. Was to step outside when two people are having a disagreement. And the next day, this particular person apologized to me, and everything was fine. The relationship is great. But you know, if you're a brawler, if you're prone to act on impulse, you can get into a lot of trouble. So one that is just ready for a fight, and we probably all have known people like that, or maybe we've been like that ourselves at one time or another, that is not a good quality for an elder. Not be a striker, one that's not quarrelsome, or pugnacious, or physically combating. So somebody that is peaceful, that is going to look for a way to diffuse a situation. I've mentioned before a former boss that I had, I thought was the best I'd ever seen at diffusing a situation. And my father served as an elder, for many years. And I saw many people come to him upset or angry or approached him in the wrong way. And, I was always amazed at his reaction to remain calm when somebody else is not calm. To remain in a very even-keeled manner. An elder may be in a situation where people come to them with problems. Or they may come with something that's not really a problem, but that person considers it to be a problem. So how does the elder deal with that? Well, you're silly for bringing that to me. That's not a problem. So there are ways that you handle confrontations, not be quarrelsome. And it's very easy sometimes for different personality types to be combative in the way that they talk. This is not just talking about, some kind of physical altercation. This is about how they deal with others, especially when there might be disagreement. Would you be considered one that exacerbates a situation, that escalates a situation, that makes it worse? Or would you be one that would calm it down and be peaceful? Also, not be greedy, not one who gets money by dishonorable means, free from the love of money, and like that, not be covetous. So though that would represent somebody that's so tied to the world that material things are number one in their life, and that is not a good quality for any Christian, not a good quality for an elder. The husband of one wife. This is a pretty obvious qualification that I think is very hard to misunderstand, but there are those in the world today that have young men that are riding bicycles around from house to house, and they say that they're elders. Well, they're not married. They don't have believing children. They're not qualified to say that they are an elder. There's so many other qualifications that they don't have as well. And another thing that we see today in our society is that some religious groups will have women elders. And a woman cannot be the husband of one wife. Well, I should say you used to could not be that. But now, you know, you could just be about anything that you want. But you are not going to be able to fit this qualification biblically. And to have believing children who faithfully love and obey God and must be of good behavior. And so we see that some of these qualifications that Timothy and Titus have received, they overlap one another, but you get the idea that this is the picture of someone that is very well-rounded spiritually, that they have a household that believes in God, they are married, they have a good reputation, that they are not one that has a reputation of being angry and obstinate and self-willed. And so all the things that you look at in their manner of life, they're trying to behave in a godly way. Also to be vigilant and to be patient. These are great qualities when you are shepherding the flock. To be vigilant means that you're going to be watchful over your own conduct, but you're also going to be watchful over the flock as well. And that you are not going to let those spiritual things in your life or in the life of others fall through the cracks, but to take care of those things and be vigilant and watchful concerning those types of things that are important as we try to help each other go to heaven, and to be patient. And it does take a great deal of patience. In fact, many have seen the effect of being patient with others in their life to help someone grow and to help someone come back to Christ, to be patient and vigilant in those efforts is what a good sower of the seed does, and it's what every Christian should do. An elder must be just. He must be fair and upright in his dealings with others. He should be trustworthy, so that if they say something, that you believe what they say, that they'll follow through with what it is they say, and that they're not going to be dishonest. And to be gentle, not harsh or unkind or unfair, and to be devout and dedicated to the Lord. Also, we're told that he must love what is good, that he must rebuke the gainsayers or rebuke those that are not following God's will. Loving what is good, so you're not participating in evil, not going to participate in false doctrine. We've already mentioned the being given to hospitality, concerned about the welfare of other strangers and brethren. To rebuke and refute the gainsayers is to deal with those that are spreading false doctrine. And that's one reason why you can't be a novice to be an elder, because you need to be able to recognize the counterfeit. You need to be able to recognize false teaching when you hear it, and protect the sheep from that. So, you know, sound doctrine is going to protect the flock against false teachers. and to be blameless. And to be blameless is one of those words that sometimes trips people up. As we said at the beginning, that does not mean that if you look back, 20, 30, 40 years, that you cannot find anything ever that person ever said that was mean or cross, or that they ever committed a sin ever. We all have blame, but we are upright, or we should desire to be upright, that somebody would not be able to bring a charge of immorality or some charge against you that has not been corrected, that has not been repented of, and that you have a good reputation in your manner of life, and that you're not guilty of being a false teacher, but you are upholding the word of truth. An elder is to take heed to himself, to be humble. He's to rule his own family. The scriptures tell us that if he can't rule his own family, he cannot have the influence over the household of God that he should, or the sheep. But to hold fast to the word, to teach it and stand for it and defend it. And as we look at these qualifications, every qualification for an elder is a qualification for a Christian, except to be male and to be married and to have believing, faithful children and the desire for the work. Those are the ones that stand out, that would not apply to everyone, because there may be some that don't desire the work, and there are certainly some that may not have faithful children, or have some children that are faithful and some that are not, or maybe they don't have children at all, or maybe they're not married. And we don't twist the scriptures just because, well, we might know a fine elderly man that fits all these qualifications, and he's a great student of the Bible and very hospitable and fits all these qualifications of being pure in their conduct and helping others, and to be temperate and doesn't lose his temper. And just, if you're looking for a picture of someone that's trying to be Christ-like, that this person would fit that. Except that they're not married, or except that they don't have children. And so we make a decision. Well, I think the idea here is that these are just, general rules or suggestions. No, that's not the way that we approach the scriptures. And if the qualification is there, then that's what we need to be looking at. And so sometimes our own think-sos get in the way of what the scriptures say. And if you approach the scriptures in that way, number one, you're probably not qualified to be an elder if you approach the scriptures in that way. But if you tend to be loose with what the scriptures say, it's going to get you in trouble in a lot of different areas. And so if you're going to, if you so badly want elders that you want to appoint somebody that is not qualified, how are you going to approach the scriptures in other areas? So when we look at these qualifications, these are not suggestions. But this is what the scriptures say about this. So I know that was a really whirlwind tour of what the scriptures have to say about the qualifications of elders. And as you saw, there are many that you might want to delve into deeper. Or no, Randy could have talked 3 weeks about anger or one of these others. And we could have. But this is a review of some things that we as a congregation have studied in the past. We went into a lot more detail about a year and a half ago on these things. So those of you that are visiting or are new to the congregation, just know that we have put a lot more attention on these things and would be happy to discuss them further with you. This is part of a review process for us as we look again at trying to be organized scripturally in the way that God would have us to be, to set things in order, as Paul told Titus. We want to set things in order. We want to be organized scripturally. So be prayerful about that as we approach this work. And hopefully this lesson will be useful to you as you consider these things. If today we can help you be responsive to the gospel of Christ in any way, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.